I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SlysOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date. Whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SlysOffice.com.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com. Joining us now, John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation, brought to you by our friends at the Operating Engineers, Local 139, also Madison Teachers Incorporated, Madison Firefighters, and Madison Teamsters. All right, John, here's a little perspective from Canada about what's going on with this transition.
Mr. Vice President, is it time to concede?
Despite clearly losing the election, President Donald Trump's team is working overtime to discredit the results.
There will be a smooth transition to a second Trump administration. All right, we're ready. The world is watching.
Trump's Secretary of State suggested defying the will of voters.
Have you congratulated Vice President Biden yet?
While Republicans insisted Trump is right to challenge Joe Biden's victory.
Until the Electoral College votes, anyone who's running for office can exhaust concerns about counting. No reason for alarm.
The Trump administration is still blocking any attempt at transition and stopping agencies from cooperating with Biden.
I think it will not help the president's legacy.
The rest of the world seems to have moved on. Leaders are lining up to engage with the president-elect, including Trump allies like Turkish President Erdogan and British Prime Minister Boris Johnson.
I look forward very much to working with President Biden.
Thank you, sir.
Exactly 4 years ago, outgoing President Obama invited then-President-elect Trump to visit the White House.
Because if you succeed, then the country succeeds.
Trump's defiance today is unprecedented. So is his relative silence following the election. Instead, he's tweeting up a storm about unfounded claims of election fraud that he has yet to prove, while launching lawsuits that are not supported by evidence.
All right. The New York Times has actually done a little investigative work. They still employ people in the New York Times, not as many as they used to, but there wasn't any election fraud.
No.
And your phone agrees.
Yeah, it's calling in to confirm that fact. No, it's a funny thing. I think that of the report you just played there, you know, the key is when you've lost Boris Johnson and Erdogan, you know,
and Benjamin
Donald Trump, that's a bad message.
Benjamin Netanyahu.
Well, of course, these are all very practical people. They recognize that the clock has ticked past midnight. It's the next day, and for Trump, it's an interesting thing. And I honestly don't know the answer to this. Maybe you do. Whether he recognizes that he has indeed lost, and in fact lost quite badly, and is just playing this out in order to position for the future, right? To solidify his base, not to seem weak, you know, and so he can kind of put things together for that 2024 presidential run, or if he's truly delusional. And it's a bad thing for a country to have to sort through that as regards its president, because to give you an example, if Nixon was doing something like this, nobody would think he was delusional, right? Everybody would think, oh, yeah, okay, this is a scam, he's on it. With Trump, it's a much more kind of troublesome mess of things.
Well, look how he started his political career out in earnest, and that was putting out the false notion that Barack Obama wasn't born in the United States.
That's true.
So he's kind of... This is sort of ending as it started. But...
It is.
Is he going to channel his Grover Cleveland? I don't know.
Well, the interesting thing is that in part, Trump has always been a creature of the media, right? And both somebody who manipulated it, took advantage of it, but also somebody who sort of rose and fell with it. And the fact that he can even sort of peddle the lies at this point and get any traction for it is a result in some ways of the way that the media covers presidential elections.
How would you like to be in the news meetings at Fox News Channel right now?
Oh, that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's and in general, it's kind of like, you know, how do you fight with this reality? But then there's a deeper sense of it, right? That everybody's looking at now. You know, we still got to complete the count in Georgia, right? Oh, yeah, you know, it's very close, and it's close in Arizona, and that's no question of that. Maybe a recount in Wisconsin. But then you step back from the thing, and, you know, it's yesterday into today. Biden's going to move to over a 5 million vote victory, right, in the national popular vote. He's now got a percentage of the national vote that is greater than what Ronald Reagan had when he won in 1980, and he's won back all the states that that Democrats lost, the key states, you know, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania. He's got potential now in two states that have been historically pretty Republican. You know, this isn't a close race.
Did you know when Ronald Reagan won in 1980, which was not a close election, and I'm not going to pretend that it is, but. Yeah. There were a lot of states that were really close, especially in the South. Carter still
That's
had
right.
a base of voters in the South. Reagan won by 1% or so in Mississippi and Alabama and South Carolina. And, you know, there were a lot of states that were really close.
Yeah. No, and it's the interesting thing about it is you're right. We've had a lot of elections where at the state level it's close, right? And the challenge of it is to sort of step back and have a little perspective. And say, yeah, but it's clear America chose Joe Biden. It's, you know, I mean, you like it or not, it's, you've got clarity there. And so, in a sense, Trump is trying to, you know, kind of play this thing out, play on some margins, keep people, you know, trying to, you know, wrap their head around some concept he's putting forward. But he's just, the thing that's kind of killing him politically at this point is he's got nothing to work with. You know, it was summed up perfectly by the Saturday circumstance, right? Where, you know, Rudy Giuliani's standing there in the parking lot of the landscape, you know, operation in Philadelphia.
Between the adult and across from the crematorium.
Yeah, I mean, and it's there that they're getting the word, right? That you know, this thing has been called. And the challenge was all of the absurdity of it. Everybody's focused on the absurdity of that event with Giuliani. But then you step back and you say, okay, did Giuliani have anything there? Was he working with anything there? And he's literally talking about the possibility that ballots are coming in from Mars. You know, I mean, it's just, they're so beyond.
Yeah, I love the phrase that somehow ballots were found. No, they weren't found. They were always there. And thanks to Republican legislatures, they couldn't count them earlier. This was a plan. They planned to do this, but
it's clear they planned for chaos.
Right.
They try and plan for chaos.
Right.
But you know what undermined them a little bit was that the plan for chaos counted on the elections being close. And in fact, it's not really that close in Pennsylvania.
Okay, so here's a montage of how a transition should go when an incumbent president loses to a challenger.
After a moment of posing for photographers, it was into the White House to continue what has been a day of transition business for the president-elect. The president pledged personally to Carter he would do everything needed to make the transition smooth.
There could not have been a better demonstration of unity and friendship and goodwill than has been shown to me by President Ford since the election.
With the president grinning broadly, he escorted the Reagans back outside, saying, "We're very glad to have you here."
And I must say, the president was most gracious, most helpful, and has gone all out to be completely helpful in the transition.
When George Bush walked down to welcome Bill Clinton to the White House, both men were ready to focus on the future, not the pain of their bitterly fought campaign. but they spent twice as much time together as had been planned, including an hour and a half alone in the Oval Office. Afterward, Clinton was clearly grateful for the tone Bush established.
It was a terrific meeting. The president was very helpful to me.
So, there's a line in a 21 Pilots song called Stressed Out. Great song. If we could turn back time to the good old days, if we could just get people to act like human beings, wouldn't that be great?
Can you imagine that there was a time in which the contest between Bill Clinton and George H.W. Bush was described as bitter? You know, I mean, compared to what we've seen, you know, compared to where we're at now. I mean, I covered that race, and it was pretty intense. But I, you know, by comparison to what we see now, it was kind of a very dignified, very noble contest between people who essentially shared at least some baseline values. And I think where we've gotten to now is that many of the values as regards an election have just been thrown out. And it's easy to blame personalities and even parties for this. But I think if you step back from it, one of the things you realize is that there was a point in American history where politics went pro. You know what I mean? Where it was no longer sort of this thing where people came in and, you know, brought their own personalities, their own, you know, sort of regional quirks and characteristics to it. Now it's this big industrial project, right, involving, you know, billions of dollars and, you know, whole structures of how you do things. And one of the things that's changed is that it's so high stakes, it's so winner takes all, you know, win at any cost, that a lot of those core values have been pushed to the side. And, you know, the interesting thing about Biden, who obviously you and I both have along the way had some problems with, it's not that he's some perfect player, but he is so old that he actually kind of harkens back to and can remember how it was and what some of those values are. And he pitched throughout the campaign and has pitched since his victory a theory that you can get back to that, or at least some theory that you can recreate some of it.
I'll tell you how gracious he is. He went and did a eulogy for Jesse Helms after he died. And, you know, some people think that's a bad thing, but he views elective office and serving with people that he disagrees with at a certain level of, these are not my enemies.
That's right. And there's no question that this is who he is, and it's where he's at. Now, I happen to think that in the election campaign, that was a strength. I genuinely think that's one of the reasons, one of the many reasons, that he did better among older folks than Democrats have in some recent cycles. And obviously that wasn't, certainly not the only reason. Some of the things that Trump said about veterans, some of the things that, you know, the fears as regards Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid.
Pandemic,
of course. But there's something there. I think people did say, well, you know, this guy, I understand where this guy's coming from. I like some of this. Now that, again, being a strength, flip side is there's also a weakness there, because there's always a danger if you're playing by rules that the other side has thrown out, right? That the other side will not play by. And then you're in this sort of great wrestling match, not merely with your rivals, but also with kind of the center of gravity, whether you can get politics back to a point where the way you want to do it.
Well, something tells me that Joe Biden is not surrounding him. President-elect Biden is not surrounding himself with patsies. I don't think Ron Klain is a pansy.
No.
I get the feeling he's willing to, you know, throw a couple punches along the way.
Well, you know what one of Biden's great strengths is? And somebody pointed this out to me. I thought it was a great insight versus a simple one. It is, he's a party man, i.e. that he is a very, very loyal Democrat. And we've had some presidents who've come up, Democratic presidents, who, you know, were more their own person, right? And I understand that. They came up based on their persona in their place, and they weren't particularly devoted to the kind of long-term work coming up inside the Democratic Party.
Obama and Carter come to mind.
Well, even Clinton, right? Because
Clinton was, in
some ways, an outsider.
Let me play one more clip, and I just want a short answer on this because we have to take a break. But here's a clip of Republicans talking about the very act of voting.
30, 40, 45 days before the election, you can keep voting casually. You go in, vote. Maybe not any day. There's no one day you vote. It's a transition from a rugged individual who has to take a responsibility to know the issues, show up on election day unless he's working or she's sick, and then turning it into sort of an entitlement.
Mitch McConnell and I need to come up with an oversight of mail-in balloting. If we don't do something about voting by mail, we're going to lose the ability to elect a Republican in this country.
Voting is an entitlement.
It should be. Yeah. I mean, if it isn't that, if it isn't a baseline entitlement that everybody's got a shot at, then we're not a democracy. But I also like, I always appreciate Lindsey Graham for, because I think he's actually a rather smart guy. But, you know, he gets talking so much that he actually says things that are, you know, uniquely revealing. And when he says, we've got to come up with a plan for how to deal with mail-in ballots, or basically easy ways to vote, or Republicans are never going to be elected again.
I think we are still seeing the Republicans reaping dividends from what has happened in North Carolina over the years after Barack Obama won that state back in 2008. John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation will be back at SlysOffice.com.
Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson, we love guitars.
The attorneys at Gingras, Thompson, and Walks have had the honor of receiving numerous awards for their work both in and outside the courtroom. But just as important as receiving accolades for being skilled attorneys, it's equally important to give back to the community in which they live and work. If you want a personal attorney that can help you in so many different areas, they've got them. They're in Eau Claire, Madison, Milwaukee, and Waukesha. They're easy to reach. GTWLawyers.com. That's GTWLawyers.com. We're back at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by our friends at Madison Computer Works, also Jeff's Guitar Clinic. I want to talk to you a little bit about this. You were quoting Nate Silver before we got started, saying that he's never seen a party so unhappy after a victory. So here is Representative Spanberger, who represents the suburbs of Virginia. Okay, and so here is James Clyburn.
Do you think that did cost you House seats? The socialism label, particularly in South Florida, those two seats, and defund the police?
Well, I don't know about all the seats. I've talked to people down in South Florida. They told me that really, really was a problem down there. But I can tell you about the first congressional district of South Carolina. I really believe that that's what cost Joe Cunningham his seat. And I can also tell you about the Senate here in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy Harrison started to plateau when Defund the Police showed up with a caption on TV right across his head. That stuff hurt Jimmy.
Okay. So, your thoughts.
Harry Truman. Quote.
Okay.
Socialism is a scare word they have hurled at every advance the people have made in the last 20 years. Socialism is what they called public power. Socialism is what they called Social Security. Socialism is what they called farm price supports. Socialism is what they called bank deposit insurance. Socialism is what they called the growth of free and independent labor organizations. Socialism is the name for almost anything that helps all the people.
Oh, you were ready now, for this. You were ready for this.
I was. Harry Truman was not a socialist. I don't think anybody accused him of that. But he knew that if you were having that thrown at you, you don't run away from it and say, oh, I'm not a socialist. Oh, I beat Bernie Sanders or whatever. No, you explain it, right? You put what the Republicans are doing in perspective. So with all due respect to folks who are, you know, somehow suddenly saying, oh, yeah, boy, we were really damaged by, you know, throwing around the S word. The only reason that anybody was damaged by throwing around the S word, by the Republicans throwing it around, is that the Democrats didn't know how to talk about it.
Well, it's my understanding.
They didn't study their Harry Truman very well.
But it's, you know, that's easy to say, but when you're getting bombarded with YouTube ads in South Florida, and from what I understand, the dirty money that went into South Florida, running ads in Spanish that were complete. Evidently, there's not much regulation. You know, we have all these attorneys going through these ads, and TV stations won't run ads that have false information. Evidently, it was quite the Wild West down in Florida. So there, you know, Donna Shalala losing didn't break my heart, but it was indicative of what was going on down there. So obviously, we have to try to figure out how to deal with this because, you know, it's easy for members living in, 90% Democratic districts to tell Representative Spanberger, you know, that Abigail Spanberger, that in fact, whatever. But it is something that the moderates have to deal with. I mean, Connor Lamb won by a huge margin in 2018. He only won by 2 or 3 points this time in a pretty good district in Western PA.
That's right. And you know what?
And he's a pretty good candidate.
Well, I got news for you, Sly. That's normal. What you're seeing is normal. One of the great fantasies of amateur punditry is, which is, by the way, only slightly better than professional punditry. But one of the things that people do is they think, oh, if you win the presidency, boy, there are incredible coattails, right? You know, that's, if you win the presidency, everything's just got to go perfect up and down the line. That's how it goes. That is not true. When Richard Nixon won 61% of the vote, 49 states, in an enormous landslide in 1972, Democrats picked up 2 seats in the Senate. You know who one of the new senators was? Somebody who beat a Republican incumbent in the Nixon landslide of 1972? Young guy named Joe Biden.
Okay.
And so one of the things this is important.
Okay, but there is,
these people are trying to advance a line of argument that they think.
All right. Let me try this again. You've seen the numbers in Stevens Point. You've seen the numbers in Superior. Nick Milroy almost lost his reelection. That used to be the safest assembly seat in the North. Stevens Point, the Democrats recruited a former police officer with a Polish surname, and he got his ass kicked in that Stevens Point district. Joe Biden,
I'm not denying that.
Joe Biden only won Portage County by a couple points. There is something going on.
You're totally right. You're totally right. There are changing dynamics. And I happen to agree. I agree with you totally that there have to be better ways to talk about these issues. There have to be better ways to communicate about them. But there also has to be some understanding that, you know, in a volatile presidential year, especially at a time like this in our history, you aren't necessarily going to get the coherent result you want. And you have to recognize that, and then you have to recognize how you're going to deal with it going forward. And I'm sympathetic to the opening the discussion and doing it, but I'm not very sympathetic to the folks who come out and they say, "Oh well, it's because these folks brought up these issues."
Well, right? You know, I think it's a little more complicated in some ways. I'm not sure because let me play this clip from AOC.
Well, first and foremost, I want to acknowledge that so many of the really hard fight that a lot of our swing district members had. And it is not to deny that Republicans levied very effective rhetorical attacks against our party. That, I believe, is absolutely true. But I think one of the things that's very important is to realize that very effective Republican attacks are going to happen every cycle. And so the question is, how do we defend ourselves against that? If you look at some of these, some of the arguments that are being advanced, that defund the police hurt, or that arguments about socialism hurt, not a single member of Congress that I'm aware of campaigned on socialism or defunding the police in this general election. And these were largely slogans, or they were demands from activist groups that we saw in the largest uprising in American history around police brutality. And so the question that we have is, how can we build a more effective democratic operation that is stronger and more resilient to Republican attacks? And I believe that there are many areas that we can point at in centralized democratic operations that are extraordinarily weak. For example, our digital campaigning is very weak. And this is an area where Republicans are actually quite strong. President Trump, he won the 2016 election, as we know, largely on digital organizing and strategy. And I believe that many Republicans were very effective at digital organizing and strategy as well, whereas the Democratic Party is still campaigning largely as though it's 2005.
All right. I think Ben Wickler might disagree with her on that.
Well, different
state, right? Here's the thing. This must have been about, 4 or 5 years ago. I went to the Democratic Convention. It was being held at the Marriott in Middleton. And I saw all the different groups. There was the LGBTQ group. There was this group, that group. And I thought, this doesn't feel like Stevens Point or the Fox Valley. The cultural divide. Transgender people using bathrooms and some of the stuff going on. It's a problem in some rural parts of this country. People have the right to fight for all those great things, but it seems like people in places like Stevens Point and Superior, they've kind of had it. They don't agree with Democrats on guns. They don't agree with them on gay marriage. They don't agree with them. And they have decided they'll vote for people that screw them economically because they don't have anything in common with Democrats.
I don't buy that.
I do. I
understand.
See, this is why I don't think you and I are ever going to agree on this.
We're not going to agree on it, and I'll tell you why. If you're satisfied with the message that the Democratic Party put out in this campaign on economics, then I'll give you your point. Wait a minute. They're not.
When is the last time a Democratic candidate for president proudly mentioned unions in his ads? Joe Biden did.
Yeah, he got better. But the fact is, you want to talk about Florida? Let me give you Florida. Florida voted for Trump for president, and then they voted for $15 wage. For the $15 wage.
Okay.
Didn't Joe Biden's
But you're proving
why,
my you're proving no. my you're proving my point.
Yeah.
You're proving
why
my
didn't
point.
Joe Biden, I'm not proving your point. Why didn't Joe Biden run his campaign in Florida saying vote for Joe Biden and a $15 wage? They don't do that, Sly. They don't do it.
I think the problem is deeper than that. You know how strong I am about economics, and do I wish Democrats would run more on that? I think this cultural stuff is killing us. I think the defund the police, I think the... How many Democratic representatives condemned tearing down those statues?
Fox News exit poll.
How many Democratic legislators in Wisconsin condemned tearing down those statues?
So the Fox News exit poll, okay? Not some liberal line of analysis here. Fox News exit poll. 72% of people think racism in policing is a serious problem. 72% of Americans. 68%.
That isn't what I asked you.
No, but what I'm telling you is
you want this to be, you know, some sort of simple thing where the...
I don't think it's a simple thing. I think it's actually a complicated thing. I'm telling you, and I told you all summer long, this attack on the Madison police was going to cost us. Democrats underperformed in Iowa, Grant, Lafayette, Green, Rock, Columbia, and Sauk County. Joe Biden's numbers worse than Tony Evers. I'm telling you, it's a problem.
I think that we're in a period of transition. You find ways to talk about stuff. You find more effective ways to talk about it. But the fact of the matter is that you can't sacrifice issues where there needs to be change, where something has to happen, and you sacrifice it to such an extent that, you know, you keep pushing it aside. You don't deal with those issues.
I say push police reform, but I also say when people are denigrating the police and making unsubstantiated charges and tearing down public property, you condemn it. And frankly, Wisconsin Democrats did not do that. And the other thing I will say, and I'll say this about Representative Pocan, and I'll say it about the governor. After the Kenosha shooting happened, they jumped right on board and condemned it, and they should have waited. Because they should have waited for an investigation. There's a whole bunch of things that have come out since then, and I'm still not justifying the shooting. But they were too quick on the trigger. It's about sentiment.
I'm going to hold to the view.
I talk to blue-collar people every day, John.
I respect you. I respect that you do. I talk to Trump voters all the time. I talk to folks who are on the line.
Yeah, but what did we fight about all summer? What did we get into some really good, not personal fights, but,
no, but
like
we
some
disagree.
Real debates? Like we strongly did. And this conversation you and I are having, this can't be papered over. There is a real divide.
There is a divide, and it's healthy to talk about it, and it's healthy to go into it. But one of the things that has to be understood is that when you talk about, you know, the importance of the economic issues and focusing on them, the fact is that I think you can embrace the need for real reform, for fundamental reform in policing. You could talk about the need to protect LGBTQ people in this country. You can talk about all sorts of issues, and they can fit into context of a broader debate if you can give people a sense that if you're elected, you're gonna actually deal with the whole host of issues that have to be dealt with. And one of the challenges at this point is, and I will hold to this very strongly, that you do not have in the Democratic Party a coherent economic message, and as a result, the debates become so focused on, you know, or the Republicans, you know, use their openings to make all the charges and make all the claims on social issues. And you know, I do not think that it is impossible at all to advance an economic and social and racial justice agenda in this country and to win on it.
But there has
the fact is I think it's quite doable.
But there has to be some guardrails. And we went off the rails this summer. I'm sorry, we went off the rails this summer, and I'm willing to bet that since George Floyd's murder, and that's what it was, by a Minneapolis police officer, I'm willing to bet that cost us dearly in this election because of the rioting. And I don't think it was Democrats rioting. I just think that the sort of passivity about condemning, Jonathan Brostoff, for instance, representative from the east side of Milwaukee, man, he was all down with, people's lives are more important than property. Look the other way. It doesn't matter. You know what? That doesn't work. That just does not work with people. People were horrified what happened with George Floyd, but people do not want their cities burned down.
Look, I'm willing to accept that there'll be a great deal of discussion and debate about this, right? But I will hold to the view that that Joe Biden won the presidency primarily as an alternative to Donald Trump. And that was effective. That succeeded. But the Democratic Party, and I wrote a book about this, the Democratic Party has got to figure out how it's going to talk about the future and about the changes that need to occur in this country, fundamental changes that do need to occur, and needs to learn to talk about it in a much more effective way.
All right, I'm going to get the last word in here. Okay? In order to have people listen to you, you've got to have a baseline of some shared common values. And if someone has the perception that you don't believe in a civil society of protecting people's property and protecting against violence, it's such a baseline, you're never going to get them to listen to you. They just aren't. You can come up with the greatest economic plans in the world, but they just are not going to listen to you. So with that, thank you, John Nichols.
I appreciate talking to you, Sly.
Thank you for coming on. Sly'sOffice.com.
Sly'sOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.